Gunovations Podcast for June 25th, 2006, coming to you from Sunnyvale, California. Welcome to the Killer Innovations Podcast. I'm your host, Phil McKinney. Before we get started, please keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are mine and mine alone, and do not necessarily reflect those of my past, current, or future employers. In this episode of the podcast, we're going to discuss overcoming the innovation block, how to prevent innovation, and yes, you've heard that correctly, how to prevent innovation, and of course, the killer question of the week. Sit back, get out your notebooks or your laptops, and enjoy this episode of the Killer Innovations Podcast. We've all been there. We've all had those struggles when we're trying to come up with that idea, or trying to be creative, and we just can't get there. We've hit the wall. We've hit that innovation block. We find ourselves looking at that blank piece of paper or that laptop screen. It's blank. You just can't get that first step going. For me, it's when time is an enemy. I'm facing a deadline. I have to solve a problem, or I've got a key presentation coming up or new products or new service ideas that management's waiting for me or waiting to hear from me about. But how do you get started? How do you get out of the starting gate and get over the innovation block? Well, here are some tools and exercises that I've used and I found helpful. They may not exactly apply to you, but I think you can adapt them or you can modify them to fit your specific needs. First up, I usually do an exercise of random words, pictures, different pieces of technology. Keep in mind that I am in the technology field, but you can apply it to your own industry. And what I do is I make random connections. So in the case of random words, I'll just list out a bunch of different words, and then I'll just circle and connect them and use those as starting points in order to start off the creative process. In the case of pictures, I go out to Flickr. I look at the open source pictures and just randomly scroll through that. Now, for those of you who are longtime listeners of the podcast and who participate in the KI community site, you'll know that I'll connect or link in Flickr photos as part of kind of the visual triggers to drive some creativity or some discussion on the Killer Innovations community site. So I do that even without the KI community site. I do that on my own. I'll just find random pictures, look at them, and try to make connections or find little elements of a picture that potentially could be a trigger for some new ideas. Now, in fact, recently, I think it was this last week, I posted on the reblog site at Killer Innovations, there's a tool that will randomly connect pictures from Flickr and create a poster or a montage that you can use during brainstorming sessions. I haven't tried it yet. I did link it onto the reblog site so you can find it over there. But again, taking those pictures. The key here is that you're trying to find something, a trigger that forces you to think beyond kind of the problem that you're facing or the idea that you're trying to generate, using that external stimulus from the standpoint of using this randomness. The second tool or exercise that I use is a lot of sketching and drawing. What I try to do is I draw a picture of the problem. What comes to mind when I'm trying to think of it, whether it's a new piece of technology, a new product, or I'm trying to solve a particular problem. First thing that comes to my mind, I'll just sketch that out. It may be a picture of something totally unrelated, but I just draw it on a piece of paper. And then I just continue to doodle. Now, in fact, this is one of these things that just drives my wife nuts because beneath my easy chair in my house in Virginia, I keep a very large pad. I don't know how big it is, but it literally can sit over both arms of my leather chair. And I'll sit there while everybody's watching TV or watching movies, and I'm just constantly doodling. I'm writing words out that may have a meaning on something I'm working on, or I'm just doodling, or I'm doing mind mapping exercises. But I find that because of my background of being very graphically oriented, that getting onto paper and constantly doing that sketching, I can usually, after time, start to narrow in on something that becomes a trigger. So for me, sketching, drawing is an important tool exercise for me to kind of kickstart the creativity or the innovation process. Next, I'll scan what I call my idea folder. Now, this idea folder for me is literally a folder. It's actually an accordion file that I have. I used to carry it with me, but now it's gotten just way too big. So I actually have two now. I have one in Virginia and one in California. What goes into the idea folder is usually ripped out pages from magazines. Now, for any of you who've ever, who know me and who've ever traveled with me, you know that I take literally dozens and dozens of magazines shoved into my briefcase on airplane flights. When I'm on the airplane, I'm literally ripping out pages that I want to keep, and I stuff the other magazines either into the seat back in front of me, or I give it to the stewardess to throw out. But it's those torn out pages that become the seeds that go into the idea folder. Now, it isn't just a random article or a random piece of paper. It's something that has triggered something of interest to me, and I'll usually circle it in pen. I'll write a handwritten note on it for whatever caught my eye when I was actually reading it. Pages that I normally will rip out of magazines automatically and keep are things like what's called the info porn page from Wired magazine. Now, this is not, you know, dirty or adult-oriented. It's a page that is always in Wired magazine that takes statistics or interesting statistics and tries to drive some interesting conclusions. Now, I've kept literally those pages out of every Wired magazine back to issue number one. I've got them scattered around the house, but I've got them mostly in my idea folder, and I find those to be particularly interesting. Same thing with Wired magazine. If you go to the back, they have the, I don't remember what it's called, but it's kind of like found in the future or found from the future. It's kind of a drawing or a pictorial of a new kind of device or something that'll be available 15 years in the future as if it existed today. Same thing with Business Week. I tend to try to rip out the Trends to Watch page or Technology to Watch page out of Business Week. And I also scan my old idea notebooks. So my notebooks that I've kept where I've just written down ideas that are just totally unrelated to what I'm working on, but I want to keep that idea, I keep it in my idea notebooks, and I'll just randomly go back. So again, I'm scanning my idea folder, which consists literally of these pages that I ripped out of magazines. In some cases, I've written things on index cards, which I have a hard time trying to keep my arms around, but because I have literally thousands of index cards. And then also scanning my old idea notebooks, which now actually fit into a set of these very large Tupperware containers at this point. Next, what I find when I'm really hitting that innovation block is stop. Let the unconscious take over. I find that if you continually try to force it, the brain just kind of gets locked up. There are times when you just have to stop, you have to back off, and you let the unconscious work. The unconscious is really the area that contains a lot of that spark, that initial fleeting idea that can really lead to that breakthrough or that killer idea. But you got to let that unconscious work. You've primed the pump, you know the subject matter, you know the area, then you just got to stop, take a walk. Do something totally not related to the idea or the business. Not that I'm talking about go away for 20 minutes and then come back. You may need to let it percolate. For me, I find a lot of that happens overnight. Don't try to dwell on it. Stop. Go do something else. Go out to dinner. Have a relaxing evening. Get together with friends, particularly friends who are not in the industry. So you're not talking shop all night. Go have a relaxing evening. Go to bed. And for me, that's when my unconscious really kicks in. And in fact, I always keep a notebook next to my bed so that I can get up. If the idea or a spark hits, I can catch that idea and not try to remember it, you know, in that kind of sleepy fog. So write it down, go back to sleep. But for me, it's that unconscious time that really allows me to find that spark for that new idea. But you just got to stop. You just can't continue to dwell on it. Next, for me, I will go out and I'll read or watch something that I normally don't do. So I'll, for instance, watch the Discovery Channel on a subject that's completely unrelated, whether it's volcanoes, which is what I was doing earlier this morning, or on new weapon systems, or about some, you know, endangered, you know, fish in some river in some part of the world. So I watch the Discovery Channel. I listen to different radio stations. I'm looking for new ideas, or I'm stuck in a block. I'll randomly scan to a radio station and then force myself to listen to that for a day or two. Because then it, you know, what it is you're opening yourself up to new areas, new markets, new customers, new segments, new pieces of information that potentially could be that spark. And I also read different magazines. So I'll go in. In fact, today I did this. I walked into a Barnes & Noble. I picked five magazines of magazines that I've never read before in serving areas that I never even had thought of even reading, and literally going through and circling the articles and circling the advertising, looking at that as areas of potential spark for new ideas. Along with kind of this reading and watching and do something you normally don't do, here's a little trick that, albeit you may make it sound simple, but it kind of forces you to get out of the usual patterns. We get stuck in mental patterns. We think the same way. We come to conclusions. Our process of analyzing a problem or analyzing an idea gets stuck in a rut. You got to break the rhythm. But one of the most common patterns we also get stuck with is the way you drive to work. How do you get in the car? What roads do you take in order to get to your job or to drop the kids off at school or to you know, to go to the metro station or public transportation to get to your job? Tomorrow, go a different way. Even if it's slightly out of your way, force yourself not to ride on the same road that you normally ride on. What is it you notice? Billboards may be different. Neighborhoods may be different. Level of traffic may be different. Do something different. Force yourself not to get stuck in these patterns. And these patterns are things like driving the same way, eating the same thing at lunch every day, talking to the same people every day, reading the same newspaper, reading the same magazines. These activities just kind of reinforce the same mental model and the same thinking processes that kind of get us stuck into these innovation ruts. So when I talk about read or watch or do something you normally don't do, watch TV channels you don't normally do, listen to radio stations you don't listen to, read different magazines or newspapers that you normally don't read, drive a different way to work, eat something different that you normally don't eat, experiment, break the rut, break the habit. And then lastly, look at history. Now this is one of the things that kind of ties in a little bit to the idea folder, but I'm a big one to keep historical trend information. And historical trend information, it's not even related to the industries that I'm involved in. Here in Silicon Valley, one of the big things that's going on right now is a lot of the VCs are rescanning the dot-com business models, the ones that failed, because they think that there might be something new now that we're kind of into this Web 2.0 strategy, that there may be business models that couldn't work initially but could work now. And keep in mind, as I've said in previous podcasts, is nothing is ever new. It's very rare for someone to come in with something totally unrelated to anything that's ever existed. We're always building and improving. So by looking at history and looking into other industries, you can then potentially connect the dots or find that pattern of dots that potentially could give you some insight into new ideas. Look at failures in history. Now, in my case, I came from my background prior to my current job is I was in the telecommunications industry. And I actually gave a speech, oh, this was a long, long time ago. And I was showing historical trend lines, and I was comparing it to the railroads. So when the railroads first emerged here in the U.S., big boom, there was this, you know, literally hundreds and hundreds of railroad companies that were established. What happened? Too many railroads. And all of a sudden, you saw this big dip and this big failure. People couldn't figure out the business model. There was a bunch of early pains and growing of the industry. Track widths were different, so somebody's engine and cars running on one track could not move over and run on somebody else's track. Just a lot of issues in the railroad industry back in the early days. And I was actually giving this speech talking about historical trends of big expansion markets and ultimate collapses. And in the case of the railroad industry, there was a significant collapse that literally resulted in many, many, many people losing their fortunes. Well, I gave this speech about a year before the dot-com bust. Now, the only thing is I wish I had listened to my own advice, because my point was at the time that there are historical trends that you can apply to what was happening at that time. But needless to say, I didn't even listen to my own advice. But so looking at history can be, you know, a key area for you to try to identify or come up with new ideas to get over this innovation block. So again, some of the tools and exercises that I've used, again, you may need to adapt these to whatever it is, how you think and what the processes are that you're comfortable with. First off, random words, random pictures, doing these random connections, and spending time on that to try to drive new ideas. Second, sketch or draw, doodle. Get a piece of paper out, get on your PC, just start putting words down until something starts to make sense to you. Create and scan your idea folder. These are random bits of pieces of information that you can bring together when you do hit this block that could potentially be the trigger. Fourth, stop. Let the unconscious take over. Don't dwell on it. Just get away from it and let your unconscious mind kick in. Fifth, read or watch or do something you normally don't do. Break the habit. Break not only the mental habit, but break the traditional habits that you get stuck in. If you break those habits, those tend to help break the mental habits. Lastly, look at history. Look outside your industry, but look backwards to see and identify areas and opportunities or triggers that could give you some insight to go out and break through this innovation roadblock and therefore come up with that next killer innovation. I came across the post by Scott Sulhorst on his blog about how to prevent innovation. When I first read it, it hit me that we've all been there. At least I know I've been at companies who have followed these rules and basically destroyed the opportunity for innovation within their business. I found this list of how to prevent innovation so compelling, I wanted to share it with you, the listeners. Now, pay attention. I am not condoning. In fact, I'm condoning that you do the exact opposite of these steps. But I think it's important that all of us that are involved in innovation and creativity within our respective organizations recognize the little things that we do day in and day out that potentially is part of the problem of preventing innovations from occurring. So again, I just want to share this with you. But again, I'm not condoning this. My view is you do the exact opposite. Obviously, this is the rules to prevent innovation, and the purpose of this podcast is to help you ignite the innovation within your organization. So with that, let's go through the post on Scott's blog. Most companies do a darn good job of providing incremental improvements to existing products and services. It's easy, it's fast, and it's what we all hear from the marketing and customer focus groups. For those companies who have accidentally let innovation sneak in, what are they doing wrong? So companies with a history of accidentally letting innovation emerge have flawed management processes. These are: they fail to screen out those innovators in the hiring process. They mismanage their employees who end up innovating when they should be towing the line. They inadvertently reward innovation instead of mediocrity with recognition and compensation. They create opportunities to innovate, and their employees drive Mack trucks through those leap holes. So, here are some guidelines about how to fix these problems, how to prevent innovation from occurring at your company. First off, hire employees looking for safety in their roles. Innovation happens when people stretch outside their comfort zones, so don't let them stretch. Find people who primarily want security and a 9-to-5 job. Stay away from those troublemakers who want to change the world. 2, hire incompetent employees. What better way to prevent innovation than to have people who have to focus just to do the bare minimum? For extra safety, try and find someone who can take credit for other people's work and hide their own incompetence. If we are forced to hire someone who is competent, it's critical that we make sure that they only have one area of expertise. People with more than one area of expertise, what we call switch hitters, just cause trouble by talking to people on other teams. 3, keep salaries below the 75th percentile. Innovators know their value, and when they aren't applying for jobs with intrinsic utility to them, they are commanding higher salaries. If we keep our salaries low, there's much less risk of one of these innovators sneaking into your organization. As a bonus, you'll save a fortune. 4, read the 10 Faces of Innovation by Tom Kelly. He focuses on the types of people and organizational behavior that encourage innovation. He identifies 10 personas that contribute to innovation. Put those 10 faces on the wall in HR like an FBI Most Wanted poster and coach HR to screen these people out. 5, treat employees like garbage. Yell at them. Whenever possible, call them at midnight to yell at them some more. They work for you. Make them dig holes and fill them back in again. 6, reward conservative and marginal successes. The old rule of thumb for office politics was it takes 10 good projects to recover from one bad project. Stick to it. If we punish people for mistakes when they swing for the fences and reward them for marginal and safe projects, they will quickly get the idea. This is the most subtle of all the tips. This technique has the added benefit of propagating itself around the organization. 7, micromanage. We've been promoted because we understand their job so well that we could do them in our sleep. Whatever those pesky little people think, it's wrong. We know what we want, and we know how we want it. Every day, we should make sure they do things exactly like we want. Even things like using the right font on their emails can be important. If anything slips through unmanaged, then we aren't doing our jobs. Of course, if we have a good boss, he'll tell us exactly how to manage them. 8. Only create customer-requested features. Let our customers tell us what to do. Lucky for us, customers don't have big ideas. They keep us focused on what we're doing. Don't let them whine about their other problems. That's not why we're talking to them. We just want to know if they like the idea of the animated buttons on all the dialogues. Stay away from unhappy customers. If we aren't getting the job done now, Well, we don't really care what they say. Besides, they're existing customers, and what we need are new customers. We're here to solve our problems. Oh, and don't second guess the customer. If they say they want the menu items in alphabetical order, well, that's what they want. The customer is always right. If Henry Ford had listened, think of how fast horses would be today. Even better, appoint a user representative. Then we don't have to talk to the customers at all. 9. Make performance reviews easy. Create some easy-to-measure metrics like number of sick days taken, number of PowerPoint slides created, number of meetings attended, and use those for performance reviews. People will always gravitate towards the metric. That way, we can run the reviews with a minimum amount of effort, giving us more time to tell them how to do their jobs. Just an hour a year. I know some managers who can give feedback in 15 minutes. 10. Build a kingdom. When we have information, that means we have power. With that power, we can grow our organization. The more people we have, the more important we are. We need to make sure that those other teams don't get our information. They may apply it in ways that we didn't intend. While we're at it, make sure our people don't find out what we know. Not only will it protect us from them, but it will keep them from accidentally discovering a more important problem or an alternate way to apply what they already know to a new problem domain. So again, here are the 10 rules to prevent innovation. If, on the other hand, you want to ignite innovation, if you want to ignite the passion of your people to break new ground, then have the guts to do the exact opposite of these rules. This week's killer question is about how to make some random connections that will result in new killer ideas. So, this is a multi-step process for this killer question. So first off, go into a bookstore or stop by a magazine rack and identify 5 magazines that you have never read, and in most cases, you weren't even aware existed. So dig in the back, go into a section that you normally don't read, find 5 magazines. For each of those magazines, ask yourself the following questions. 1. What do you think the characteristics are for the readers of the magazine? Is it geography-based? Is it only U.S. or the country that you're in? What's the typical age of the reader? What's the gender? What's the political affiliation? Education? Income level? Interest? Family style? Hobbies? Dreams? Fears? Hopes? Create a profile for each of those magazines of what you think the typical reader is. What is the characteristics of the reader of that magazine? Next, where do the segment characteristics overlap? You now have customer segments for 5 magazines. Where do they overlap? Is it a common age group? Is it a common demographic? Is it a common income level? Interest, hopes, fears? Where is it common? Where are they 180 degrees divergent? You got a magazine which is aimed at teenagers versus a magazine that's on senior living, that'd be somewhat divergent. So now that you have some unique views into these market segments, this week's killer question is, what changes can you make to your product or service that would address the needs of these market segments? What changes can you make to your product or service that would address the needs for these market segments? Now, you may be thinking, how in the heck can I do that if my product or service is something completely different from anything in these segments? Don't avoid the question or the exercise. Force yourself to search for answers to the question. Trust me on this. You're going to come through with a really phenomenal perspective, and opportunities if you go through the steps. By stretching yourself, you're going to move into areas of opportunities that would never reveal themselves without taking some of these actions. So again, with a view of the market segments based on the magazines that you normally don't track or sell to, what changes can you make to your product or service that would address the needs of these market segments? This week's closing thought comes from Lao Tzu and addresses the common struggle we all have around ego, credit, and recognition, somewhat tied back to the 10 rules of how do you prevent innovation. One of the key success factors for an innovation program within a company is getting people to leave their egos at the door and recognize that credit goes to everyone, yet none by name. His insights into the human soul of status, ego, and recognition is a cold slap in the face. Lao Tzu's insight is, creating without claiming, doing without taking credit, guiding without interfering. This is primal virtue. Let me repeat that. Creating without claiming, doing without taking credit, guiding without interfering. This is primal virtue. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I continue to receive some great feedback and input on the podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, and please send me topic suggestions. If there are things in the podcast that you want me to go into in more detail, send them my way. Please send your feedback to podcast@killerinnovations.com. In the last few days, we've made some significant improvements to the Killer Innovations website, mainly around improving the navigation to the full set of sites that make up the Killer Innovations content. Some of the other sites, some of you may have visited, some of you may not even be aware they exist. The podcast blog, which is the main page that you jump to right now if you type in killerinnovations.com. Reblog. Toolkit. Toolkit is where I post books, magazines, tools that I use, that I have on my bookshelf, that I read, that I have found to be useful, and therefore share those with you. Speaking, which talks about places where I will be speaking, talking about innovation. Going forward, I'm going to try to record all of those, and I'll be posting those onto the speaking slot site. And then lastly, but not the least important, is the KI community. This is a community bulletin board that allows you, the listeners, to contribute, to share ideas, to ask questions, and be able to get the full benefit of all of the listeners of the Killer Innovations podcast. So check out the new navigation and let me know what you think. So drop me an email, podcast@killerinnovations.com. While you're on the site, visit Reblog. This is where I'm posting articles on creativity, innovation, design, in general, articles that reinforce the topics that we cover in the podcast. I post each morning. I haven't missed a day yet, but there's no guarantees. So every morning I post articles that I select from the more than 80 blogs, newspapers, online publications that I read. And actually now listeners are sending me new blog sites to add to the scanning process. My goal here is really to help you keep up on the latest thinking about innovation, creativity, leadership, etc., to make it easier for you so that you don't have to go scan all these sites. You can come to one place, which is the Killer Innovations Reblog, and be able to see the latest thinking. You can search. I'm keeping the historical content there available to you. And then if you want more information, you just click on the on the title, and it jumps you right to that blog, and you can actually get the full piece of information. Also, help me repay my mentor. My mentor, who invested a lot of time in me early in my career, made one simple request as he was mentoring me through my early career, and that was is that I had to commit to mentoring others. And this podcast is my way to share with you or to mentor you with the tools and tricks and that I apply day in and day out. And this is my way of paying it forward from the investment that the mentor made in me. So if you know people who could benefit from the Killer Innovations podcast, why don't you send them an email with a link to the particular Killer Innovations podcast you think they would enjoy or benefit from and encourage them to listen. Now be careful. Don't use the podcast as a sledgehammer. Some of the listeners have tried that, and I've gotten these emails from their managers and their bosses. So use the podcast. Feel free to share the podcast. Feel free to forward the MP3 files. They're a little bit big, so I wouldn't recommend that. Put the link in and let them to download it directly. But help me pay it forward for the promise that I made to my mentor. And with that, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Hey.